welcome along to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ed McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Dickel.
And today on the show, we're talking about managing your property investment bank accounts. Now, this is something that we've got to deal with every day as property investors, managing the cash flow of those properties, the money that comes in and the money that goes out. But how many bank accounts should you have? Is it one for each property? Should it all be one? That's what we're going to talk about today, and how often you should be looking at your bank accounts. Now, Andrew, I remember when we first talked about this, you said something that surprised me, which is that for you, you have all of your bank accounts together. So for all your properties, have the same bank account. Talk to us about why.
Yeah, that's somewhat of a generalization because there might be different syndicates that I might separate out. But what I would generally do is I use one main account for my rental properties, and that would be with a particular bank. Now, that's if they're in one entity. So let's just assume that you're a couple and you've set up a look-through company to own all of your rental properties, and you've got four properties and they're all with the one bank. You haven't split bank or anything like that. Let's go into split banking as well next. People often think, okay, well, I'm going to have one account for each different property. The problem with that is one of your properties might make a cash flow positive return, one bit might be cash flow negative. And so then you're constantly juggling around money. Plus, of course, you might budget for 3 weeks a year vacancy. One might get 4 weeks and one might get one. And so you just want to make it easy on yourself. And particularly around this time of year, if you go away on holiday and then also we've got non-business days, that means your APs carry across to the next week. And all of a sudden you might miss a payment or something like that. And the last thing you want to do is have your account go into overdraft if you don't have an overdraft limit or a revolving credit, or even worse yet, have a mortgage payment go out and then have it bounce. So I try and keep things really, really simple. Set up one account. So say you're with ANZ, set up one account, have all four of your rents go into that account, and then have all of your expenses go out of that account. So all of your mortgage payments, all of your rates, your insurance, everything like that. Now, your property management fee comes from the source. So when rent's collected, the property manager will take out your payment. One thing around payments that you make for your mortgage, for your interest only, you can only have it monthly. Sometimes, I think with Westpac, you can have it fortnightly, I think off the top of my head, but most banks are monthly. I would always recommend going for kind of the third of the month. The reason I say that is because rent is paid from property managers in two installments, usually on the 1st and the 15th or 16th of the month. So it's very weird. They do it twice a month, middle and start. And so if you set payments to go out on, say, the 3rd, then generally if there has been this lag or if the property managers have an issue, we had this one time, the payments went out from Westpac where our trust account is held and something happened and all the money hit our account the next day. Now, if everyone had their payment going out for their mortgage that same night, that could cause a bit of stress. Then one of the other things that I do is I work out, okay, with my overall portfolio, I run a spreadsheet, and a lot of the investors I work with that listen to this will be familiar with it, and I'll put all my properties in the different columns and I'll know what each of them costs or brings in per week, and based on all the expenses that are going to happen over the year, including things like maintenance and vacancy and leasing fee, all the things that kind of vary a little bit. I put all of that in there in the numbers that I'm comfortable with, and then what I do is if there's a top up at the bottom, I make a weekly contribution for that because I'm paid weekly. So I pay myself from the company weekly as a salary, and then I pay my contribution to my rental properties into that account. And then it's really easy to keep on top of things. So if you're paid fortnightly, do it fortnightly, double the weekly amount, and then put that in fortnightly in line with your pay, maybe again a couple of days after your pay hits your account. Then it's very straightforward because all you need to do is maybe once a month, just check that all the rents have gone in as per what you're expecting. That's actually a really important step. One thing to remember is that property managers will send you a statement. You still need to check off that you received that money, because if you didn't, if they missed a payment and you don't monitor those things, the way you're going to find out is when ANZ calls you up and say, Mr. Nickel, you missed a payment. And then it's a lot harder, or if the accountant picks it up later on in the year. One of the other cheats that I have that I highly recommend, and I did this when I was starting out as an investor and I've never taken it away, is I always set up a revolving credit facility. So I have a rental account and I put a buffer limit on there. So the way that works is I normally say, okay, well, let's just say that everything turns bad in the world of Andrew Nickel and he can't make his contribution because, being self-employed, I can't lose my job. Let's say say Ed said something outrageous on the podcast and they closed us all down and all of a sudden Andrew was starting a career again at the bank. So there might be a period between when I'm going to receive an income again and can make that, say, $200 a week top up for my portfolio, let's just say. So then what I do is I say, okay, well, I want to know in the back of my mind that I've got 4 years worth of my contribution if I get stuck. Now, it makes no sense going and borrowing that money because, of course, then you pay interest on money that you don't need. What I would do is I'd set up a revolving credit facility of $20,000, knowing that when Ed screams something outrageous on the podcast, Andrew's got 4 years to reinvent his life and go and get a job back at the BNZ and make his top up again. And the reason you do this is you need to think in 4 to 7 year increments. A property cycle, probably 10 years nowadays, you want to have a bit of leeway that if you can't make your top up or if just something happens, you get an unexpected maintenance bill or you have an unusually high year of vacancy and you know it will average out, then it still gives you that safety net, that sleep at night fund that you don't pay interest on unless you use it. So I always liken it to insurance, that you only pay the premium if you need it because you're only paying interest on the money that you use when you use it. And let's say 1 year you used $1,000 at today's interest rate, it might cost you $40 for the year for using that money. So nothing.
And the key thing, step number one, is to figure out that overall cash flow position of your portfolio. And the important thing here, and I've been talking to quite a number of you over the holiday, whether it's via text or via live chat on our Facebook or website, talking about creating a cash flow position. And it's very important to make sure that you're not fooling yourself by not including expenses that you likely will actually have. And remember, those 7 expenses that we always account for are rates, insurance, property management and a letting fee, vacancy accounting and maintenance. All of those things in your spreadsheet, when you're figuring out the cash flow position, that's if you're not using somebody to help you figure out what that cash flow position is. And then once you have that for your overall portfolio, that's where you can set up that automatic transfer whenever you get paid, whatever that frequency is, into that portfolio bank account to make sure that there's money in there. And remember, that is going to start to build up because if you're putting money in every week and putting your rent in every week, a lot of those big expenses are only going to come out at the end of the year or midway throughout the year. So your rates, you might only pay that twice a year. Similarly, your accounting is going to be paid at the end of the year, and that might be $1,150 or $1,500, depending on how many properties you have. And so you'll start to see that money build up in there. And I'll say it, but I'll say it again, because it's very easy to fool yourself and think, well, I can take some money out and spend it on that extra holiday you want to have or that unexpected expense at home. You need to leave that money in there, because otherwise what will happen is that you might start to spend money that's in there and you think that's okay, but then you have a $3,800 body corporate fee come out and all of a sudden you're scrambling to find the money for that. You want to make sure that you're making those bill payments on time as much as possible.
Yeah, what I often say with investors is if we build up enough of a buffer in a couple of years, you can stop your contribution because there's enough in there now that we're comfortable that the property's break even though maybe we kind of budgeted for maintenance that we didn't use or vacancy that didn't happen, it's sensible to have some money of your own in that account as well. Don't let it get too out of control. You shouldn't, if you've got one property, have $10,000, $20,000 in there because maybe that's not best use of money. But always think about that rainy day. If the properties are making a profit now, which is probably highly likely in most cases now, I would suggest you keep that money for those properties. One that catches people out is the tax bill at the end of the financial year. If you're making a profit, you may be subject to a tax if there isn't a depreciation offset. And so you might want to think about, okay, well, I need to make sure that I've got some of that money in there.
But similarly as well, Andrew, even though we'd always recommend doing interest-only loans, the truth of the matter is there are quite a few property investors out there who are using principal and interest loans for whatever reason. Perhaps they bought 3 properties and 2 of them are on IO, but one's on principal and interest.
Also, if you're at a later stage in your investing career, you would do that. Look, there are absolutely cases where principal and interest is the right thing to do. It's just that the vast majority would likely have interest only and it would be better use of money. Now, just one thing around that revolving credit and using money in that account. Do not take money out of that account and then go and buy a jet ski because you saw one over the holidays and thought it was a good idea. I'm saying this in case you're listening, Brian, because Brian's one of my investors and he did do this a few years ago. Now, to be fair, what we did is then organised a top up on his personal mortgage and reimbursed that money. But that money's not there for you to use in a personal capacity. You've also got to remember that if you use money for a personal capacity, even if it's in a look through company, it's not tax deductible at that stage because you're using it for a personal use. Even if it's in the entity which is tax deductible, that's not the case.
And I know you've heard this before, but we need to keep banging on about it so that when you're tempted to go and buy that jet ski, that you've got us in your head thinking, oh yes, actually I won't do that because Ed and Andrew have banged on about it so much.
I hope that the theme song starts playing as you're walking through the store. Now, often I get asked the question, should we pay our insurance as an annual installment rather than monthly payments? Because often there's a higher payment for monthly because essentially what the insurance company is doing is financing it. That's a personal preference. I generally pay most of my stuff that I own just in my individual name in monthly installments. I don't mind paying the little bit extra. I just prefer the cash flow of it. I like to have some money build up in the account. Rates, there's no margin on that, so I wouldn't get too carried away with there. Ed, do we still have a calculator on our website for people to use for this?
I literally just wrote that down, great. Yes, and I've updated that. Now, that has some assumptions within it, such as that you're going to be using an interest-only loan, and I think it's about 2.5%, and that your rates are a certain proportion of the value of your property. I think I've used 0.048% or something along those lines, but it explains those assumptions. So you pop in a couple of quick details. It will give you a cash flow position of that property. I'll link to that in the show notes.
And if we get enough messages in, we might do something even more sophisticated later on this year. Final thing that I want to talk about is split banking, because obviously that's something that a lot of investors do. In that case, you're probably getting your deposits from your bank and then you're getting your other loans elsewhere. Now, the way I would operate this is one of my main banks is BNZ. That's where my personal bank account is. So what I often do is I use that main bank that you log into every day as my rental account. Now, I might put my revolving credit on there because, of course, that might be attached to my personal house. Again, you can still have it under a company name. Then what you'd do is you'd use that as your primary rental account, and then you'd just have an automatic payment from that rental account to the respective banks that you have the 80% loan at, say, so Westpac, for what the interest charges are there. So all the general expenses, rates, insurance, maintenance, etc., that's going to come out of your BNZ account because it's easier to operate that, and then you just have a payment for exactly what the interest is going to be. And obviously you need to remember, if you are making interest-only payments to, say, Westpac, that interest is calculated daily charge monthly, and so some months are going to be 31 days, some months are going to be 28, and so you need to accommodate for that. So I always accommodate for 31 days just so that there's a bit of a buffer building up in that secondary bank. Again, need to remember, particularly in this time of year, if the interest calculation meant that the payment was coming out on the 31st and it was going to be for 31 day month, but then of course that's not a business day, it rolls over, that could be a 33 day month. So you just need to think about that. But if you start with 31 days, you should be fine.
And just walk us through, Andrew, are there any examples of investors you've worked with or seen who haven't managed their money correctly, and what's happened in those situations? I'm sure there must be many.
You know exactly who you're thinking of as well. Yes, absolutely. So I think if you don't get these things set up at the start, right, what often happens is people will then start paying their rates and insurance out of their own personal bank account, because that might be the equivalent of their top up. Okay, if I'm paying $80 a week, $4,000 a year, which is the rates and the insurance, I'll just pay that out of my own account. Really hard when your accountant then does your return at the end of the year. Plus, what you'll find is you'll start using your personal revolving credit to pay for some of these things, and then it's hard to work out what the interest is on that component of it, especially if you've paid it back down. So just spend the time to get it set up right at the start. And honestly, the success of property investment is all in the setup, and setting everything up before you even look at a property, and then setting it up before you rent a property, and then you just leave it. So this is why we spend so much time on these things. The property kind of doesn't matter as much as the setup. If you've got a good setup and a bad property, it's better than a good property and a bad setup, because you end up having to sell because it's just a hassle.
Now, in that instance, let's say that I've been really naughty. I've got a negatively geared property because my interest rate is still a bit higher than what you'd get today at today's 1 year rate. So I'm topping that property up. But I've been very naughty and haven't been making that weekly contribution. Now, a rates bill comes in and I've got to make a $1,500 payment towards that, and I need to make that personally because there's not enough money in the portfolio bank account. Now, is the right thing to do in that instance is to transfer the $1,500 over into the property account and then pay it from there so that when the accountant comes to make that tax return, I can just give them access and they can see all the transactions there.
Now, technically, it doesn't matter, but absolutely, that's what I would do. And the reason I would do it is actually then not only is it tidier for the accountant, but then you're starting as you mean to go on. You're actually going, okay, now I'm going to do a clean slate. I'm going to tidy this all up. I'll put it across my $2,000 that I should have been making over the year, and then I'll make my payment out of that. And look, there's nothing to be ashamed of asking for help. If you're an investor listening to this thinking, oh, my accounts are a mess, just ask for some help and get it all sorted out, and we can figure these things out and then get it all set up so it is tidy. Like, I literally spend a few minutes a month on my portfolio because I've got a good setup.
Fantastic. Let's wrap it up there. But please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. It really does help us get the message out to more people. And hey, if you'd like to check out that cash flow calculator that Andrew and I mentioned here, I'm going to drop a link to it in the show notes. Otherwise, you can just find it at opuspartners.co.nz and it'll be up in the calculators and quizzes section. Thanks for listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ed McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And we're going to be back again tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics, and insights to help you get the most out of the New Zealand property market. Until next time.